Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today we have two guests, both good friends. John Galloway, my sometimes co-host, who is an evangelist from Microsoft focused on ASP.NET, and Jeff Fritz, who is an evangelist for Telerik focused on ASP.NET. But the curveball is we're going to turn the tables a bit, and Jeff and I are going to interview John about what's happening with ASP.NET. Gentlemen, how are you?
Great.
Doing fine, Jesse.
He's going to give me a hard time. Okay. John, the place I want to start is Jeff and I just released a Pluralsight course called OneASP.NET from Scratch. And that raises the question about this phrase, which has really gotten some currency lately, OneASP.NET. And could you talk for a moment about what is it? Is it real? Does it exist? Where did it come from? And what's going on with OneASP.NET?
Yeah, okay, great question. So, I mean, people that have been following ASP.NET and listening to Scott Hanselman keynotes and that kind of thing for a while have heard the phrase. And it's something that, you know, was a dream that's become more real over time. And I think finally now it's actually with Visual Studio 2013, like actually a real thing. So the idea is choice can be frustrating, but options are good, right? So you want to be able to use what you'd like to use without being locked into something. So there's always been this difficult decision when you do file new project in an ASP.NET application. Are you going to do web forms? Are you going to do MVC? Are you going to, you know, just go down to the handler and module level? And then now is it going to be web API, etc.? So those project templates have been a way to get you started, but they also kind of lock you in on something. And so there's been work done over time to make it so that the things fit better together. But now finally with Visual Studio 2013, when you say file new project, there isn't an MVC project type. There isn't a web form project type. There's just an ASP.NET application. And then you can go in and you can select, like the next step of that is you can say, well, I would like a template that kind of has mostly MVC stuff to get me started, but you can check off, I would also like all the libraries and all the tools and everything for web API and MVC and web forms, or, you know, vice versa. It's like a menu, an a la carte menu. And then part of that too is that, see, the way that file new project used to work was basically there was a zip file. And when you said file new project, it would unzip into a new directory and then it would, you know, kind of dump you in there and here you go. And so it could only do one thing. And over time, they've kind of broken that apart so that a new project really kind of pulls in NuGet packages, and it allows you to kind of mix and match quite a bit more. And does that help?
Yeah, it helps a lot. But I think the question that you have to ask is there a lot of demand for mixing and matching web forms in MVC? Is that something people are really going to do?
Well, I think so. But there's two reasons that it's helpful. One is I do talk, for me, MVC has been out forever. And on the other hand, I do talks. I just last week did an online event, and we had about 4,000 people watching at one point, and it was an introduction to MVC. So there are a lot of people that are still getting ramped up on MVC or have been locked into web forms because of exactly what I was talking about earlier. It really kind of forced you down a path, and it was really difficult to start adding MVC into a web forms project. You can do it. I've done talks about it. And again, a lot of people have showed up for those talks, but it's not easy or hasn't been easy in the past. So I do think that there is a lot of people want to be able to reuse their skills across a project. They want to be able to take an existing web forms project and start adding in MVC. They may want to take an MVC project and they've got a one or two controls that they need to use that are web forms only and, you know, be able to match to mix that into. So, yeah, I think there is some demand for hybrid apps. But on the other, you know, another benefit is that they've been totally separate silos in the past. So it's almost kind of like, you know, a new language feature would get added for VB, but you can't use it yet in C Sharp. Or a new feature gets added for C Sharp, but you can't use it in F Sharp. Or, you know, that kind of thing. It's the same kind of silos that you had with ASP.NET. And so what they've done now is, for instance, when you do this file new project, that identity system works across any of those. So there's a new updated identity system, and it's not, you know, a whole separate effort to make that work in web forms and MVC and web API, et cetera. It's just, well, it's for ASP.NET, so of course it plugs in.
And so, let's just take 1 second and define the component parts of one ASP.NET. We define them, Jeff and I define them, as six parts. That is web forms, MVC, web API. What am I forgetting, Jeff? Ajax.
SignalR.
SignalR.
And we mm-hmm. need single page applications and web pages.
There you go. So that's the seven parts of the 6-part series.
So I think that works pretty well, but you know, those are a lot of those that you're listing there are, you know, templates or components that plug in. And I think you'll see more things plug in over time. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good, you know, list. What we've been doing lately too, we've been making some updates on the ASP.NET site to make it easier to kind of find your way around. Because we've noticed over time, every single release, there's like, you know, a few new templates or a few new features. And so we make some new areas on the site for that. And then the next release comes out and we go, oh, well, where do we put the old stuff and where do we put the new stuff? And it gets confusing. And so we've been, if you go to the site, ASP.NET, you know, we've been kind of organizing it more around, well, you know, what are some of the top things you'll want to do? And, you know, people still, you know, we've got like a learn section. So then if you go to learn, there's a drop down and it's split across, you know, building web applications, building web APIs, data access, real time, and then future releases, which is kind of like, here's what's coming. So, you know, that's kind of, and the idea is more stuff will fill in those areas. So, and then one other thing we did is we added this thing on there that says common ASP.NET features. And if you look in there, we've got things, you know, like that fit across the board, again, because of the one ASP.NET focus. So things like, you know, bundling and optimization or identity, you know, mobile, you know, just so things that are kind of cross-cutting.
So, John, what I'm hearing you tell us is that it's been possible in the past to do web forms and MVC, to bring them together, but the tooling didn't make that very easy to do, and we had to build hybrid things to cross the boundary between them so we can make identity work in both sides. And it sounds like, if I'm understanding you, we're going to see a lot of improved tooling and documentation support in this next release to really help us be able to bring those two sides together.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that is just that some artificial barriers kind of go away. So in other words, there's not even a necessity to document some things that were tough before because they're just no longer tough. So I'll give you an example. In the past, if you had a web forms application and you wanted to add MVC to it, you needed this special project GUID. It was a project type ID that needed to be put into your CS project. And if that wasn't there, then you wouldn't get any of the support for right-click add controller. So a controller is, I mean, all those things are, you know, you could go into NuGet, you could add the necessary NuGet packages, you know, for NuGet, for MVC support. Same for web API and, you know, different SignalR or whatever. But you didn't have any of that kind of Visual Studio support. And you're kind of on your own. You're hacking around your project file, your web config. I did a talk about this at, let me see, I think it was CodeMash, maybe last year or something. And I went through and showed how to do all this stuff. And I actually showed a NuGet package I put together that kind of did all this setup. But I didn't release it because there were so many moving parts and it was so hacky. I just really didn't feel like it was, I didn't feel good about saying like, here you go, world, good luck, you know. So one of the big features for MVC 5, probably the biggest feature for MVC 5 is that special project type ID thing goes away. So any ASP.NET application, they'll do some intelligent checking to say like, okay, do you have the MVC libraries here and stuff? If so, you know, just add a controller. If not, we can actually pull in those libraries. So yeah, definitely the Visual Studio kind of tooling support gets easier, and also just things kind of work better together so that they don't need extra special help. I'll give you one other example, and that is around the idea of, well, in the past, they had very separate models, development models. So in MVC, you use a model, and use a controller to, you know, interact with your model, and then you display it to a view. And in the web forms world, you have each page is like a separate little application with a bunch of events, and the two are completely different animals. So what they did with ASP.NET 4.5 is come out with this whole model binding and strongly typed data controls thing. And I think that's a killer feature, and it still drives me nuts that nobody seems to know about this. But the idea is that you can use the exact same models that you use in an MVC application. And that includes data annotation attributes if you want. You don't need them. It's just a simple class. And then inside your any data control, you can say, my item type is this model. So it kind of hooks it up with that class. And then inside that data control, you can just use binding expressions. And then the final thing to wrap that all together is the control no longer, you can still use the events and stuff to, you know, set all the properties and that kind of thing. But you can also, and what I'd recommend doing is in the data control, you can say, this is the method you call that will get you your data. And if you need to make any updates, this is the method you will call to make your updates. So it's basically MVC, but it's just scoped instead of at the page level, it's scoped to the control level. So, I mean, it's always hard to talk about code, but I mean, the point is that it's really almost, it's a very similar model too. So the Visual Studio tooling gets easier. The kind of, you know, project, the stuff that's under the hood gets easier, and also the models fit together a lot better.
So if I understand you, John, you're telling me that I can use the same repository pattern, the same models that I'm already using in MVC with my web forms controls, and I don't have to change anything.
Absolutely. So that's what I tell people is that, you know, they say I've got, you know, a big web forms application, or I've got a shop and all the developers know web forms and we want to migrate, or we want to pick up some MVC skills, or we want to have the option. So I tell them the first thing you should do is get to know this model binding and strongly typed data control stuff in ASP.NET 4.5. And once you do that, then you've already got your models in place. Like you said, you've got your repository or your other services lined up, and you can interact. So then if you want, you can make a switch over, or you can just have them all play nicely together. And another cool thing to keep in mind is that an MVC or a web forms model doesn't have to live in the same project. It could be in a different project, or it can even be in an assembly. So I know, like, kind of in the web forms world, there's a little bit more of a push towards, you know, having different, like, a data access layer project and a business logic layer and stuff. Well, that plays more kind of nicely too.
So, before we dive too deep, and I do want to dive deep into this, I notice on the ASP.NET site that one of the main tabs says websites, and it shows ASP.NET with HTML5, CSS3, and JavaScript.
Yeah, so the idea with that is, you know, we tried to take a look at, instead of kind of organizing the site around here's what we've got and here's the organization that it makes sense for us, instead looking at it like, what do people want to see? What are people looking for? So, you know, you got the homepage and it has fresh content and hopefully guides you towards, you know, different parts of the site. And then you've got getting started, and that's the page you talked about. So that's the get started tab. And that is focused around what are some things you might want to do. So do you want to build a website? Do you want to build an API? Are you interested in mobile? Do you want to know about, you know, ASP.NET tooling, that kind of stuff? So when it says, the reason I go into that long diatribe there, as opposed to my previous long diatribes, is there's ASP.NET web pages. There's ASP.NET web forms, there's MVC, and they're all kind of different components, different ways you can build websites. So if you want to build a website, let's point you towards that list and we can help you make that decision. And then if you click through there, there's a video and there's some information about, you know, how do you make your decision? Which one is the best model for you getting started?
But the missing piece for me is that people have been building websites with ASP.NET for a very long time. And it seemed a choice between using something like ASP.NET, which is server-based, and using HTML5, CSS3, JavaScript, which is more client-based. And this is saying,
quote, ASP.NET is great for building standard-based websites with HTML5 CSS. So what's the story there? Is it that ASP.NET then just becomes the server part, or is it somehow mediating these other technologies?
Yeah, well, that's a great – so that websites area there is really talking about server-side, you know, the server-side focus to the websites. So if you're looking at more, you know, the client-side focus, then you're talking more about a single-page application style, and there's information there under that API section. And then, of course, we that's been a big focus overall for the ASP.NET team lately, just in general, is kind of this, you know, there's a lot of information around building building client-side applications that mostly call into services. But I do want to kind of slightly argue one point there, which is you have server-side or you have HTML5. And, you know, really that's a huge focus is the HTML5 support. I mean, that's a big reason people jumped onto MVC earlier. It's a big reason why they've made some large changes to web forms to make that more HTML5 friendly. So the idea, you know, you can have a server-side application that renders nice HTML5, CSS3, great markup, and then you can interact. You might have parts of the site work, you know, be mostly client-server communication, traditional full postback, you know, and then you may have other parts of the site that are more single-page app that are using web API calls. Does that make sense? I guess my point there is that you don't have to make that choice again. You don't have to say, well, this is going to be an only server side application, or this is going to be all HTML5, JavaScript, and no web APIs. You can kind of do that on a case through your site.
One of the things that I definitely enjoyed about MVC and found extremely positive and rewarding was how easy it was to use Entity Framework code first and to create a class in my model and just use the scaffolding to put together the Entity Framework backend incredibly effortless. Is that same support built into Web API and the other newer components?
So yes and no. The idea is definitely that, you know, Entity Framework it's designed so that Entity Framework code first works well with all of these different approaches. So you can right click, add controller, and then you can say, I would like, you know, using Entity Framework code first and scaffold around that. There's also scaffolding around web forms. And remember, I was talking about models again, that strongly typed modeling and all that. And there actually was in the preview, it's being removed from RTM and it's going to be put back in post RTM. But there was scaffolding for web forms as well. So you could right click and you could say, add, you know, scaffold web form pages for, you know, my customer model. And it would build, you know, add, update, delete, view kind of web pages, you know, ASP.NET web forms pages.
So, John, I remember we saw a preview for web form scaffolding back in February, beginning of March. Yep. I remember it was right around that last visit I had to Seattle. But at that time, that scaffolding was tightly coupled to Entity Framework. Is the new scaffolding we're going to see, is that tightly tied to Entity Framework, or are we going to be able to build that and wire up our own data sources if we have a different ORM that we're using, maybe nHibernate or something else like Open Access?
Yeah, well, so honestly, I'm not totally sure what it's going to look like because it was removed after that, and I haven't seen the final kind of thing that's going to come out after release. I do know that, like, for instance, if I would assume that it's going to be pretty close to what it's like for web forms or for MVC now, which is right now you can right click and you can say, create me an empty controller, create me one with Entity Framework, create me one with read write, and I'll fill in the blanks. So I think in general, if you're going to want to kind of bring your own, what I would probably end up doing is, personally myself, if I was using like nHibernate or something, I would still probably scaffold using Entity Framework and just change it. I do know though that also the scaffolding system is built to be extensible. It's built around the idea that, you know, people can build their own scaffolders and it works across, you know, works all the way across. that hasn't really been documented yet. It's that's still something that's being, you know, this is part of the thing of why it can be mostly baked now and it doesn't release today, is because there's still a lot of documentation that needs doing. But yeah, the idea is, so some of these new kind of cross-cutting components, there's the identity system and there's also the scaffolding system. And both of those are built to be very testable and extensible, but they're not, that's not really spelled out yet exactly how you do that. I've seen demos though, where they've shown me, here's the code, this is my scaffolder, and you can go through and write a scaffolder that's using, I believe it was C# code at the time. So instead of the T4 PowerShell based templating system they've had in the past, this is kind of more easy to just write C# code for that.
Very cool.
Does that answer what you were saying?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let me take you back to the website under Learn for single page application. It's fairly sparse, and I assume that that's just a work in progress and that a lot more is coming. But as you look through the various Learn pieces, and there's a lot now for folks to learn, as one ASP.NET may be removing some of the silos and locking you in, it also opens up the feeling that you really need to know more about each of these different pieces. And I guess what I'm getting at is there's a lot of information on the site, but it's in these disparate places. There's no, as far as I can tell, there's no story or thread that takes you through it and says, read this first, and then if you're interested in this, go read these, and then you really want to know about that, and so forth.
Yeah, you know, that's really hard to do. And I've been thinking through this a lot. I'm writing content for webcamps, and those are full day classes. And we kind of say, here's, you know, kind of an overview of what we've got. And then I just recently did a full day thing on MVC, and we did an online event earlier this year. There was a full day with myself and Damian Edwards and Scott Hanselman. The point being, it's hard to say, well, here's what you should learn. It's definitely easy to say, here's an overview of what we've got, but I don't know what you should learn, honestly. Are you going to be building data entry forms for a business? Are you going to be building a really fast site that's mostly, showing content? Are you going to be building an application that's got, you know, a lot of rich Ajax interactions and it, you know, needs a single page application? So, I mean, there's definitely kind of a, you know, maybe we need something that kind of guides you through what choices should you make. But that's sort of the idea with that get started page, is kind of like overview. Here's what we got, you know, here are the different options, and then dig in from there. It's really, and you pointed out the thing with single page applications, and that's really probably the most in flux right now. If you on that tab, and you know, of course, maybe it'll change again by the time the show's out. But on this single page apps tab, so there's an introduction, which is just, you know, some quick overview things, and then there's templates, which is below that, and there are several different community templates that we had for ASP.NET MVC4, and they kind of got you started with things like Angular or Breeze or Backbone or Ember. And now that changes a bit with Visual Studio 2013, because we don't really have that kind of separate template approach. It's this one ASP.NET, you know, so it's actually the idea of, you know, you don't have to make all these choices when you start your project. So there's a new thing that Syed and Mads and some other people on the ASP.NET team have worked on called Sidewaffle, which is a silly name.
Great name.
Yes. So Sidewaffle, SIDEWAFFLE.com. And this is an open source thing that makes it easier to add template packs in. So instead of kind of requiring an entire, you know, Visual Studio, a V6 update that kind of adds in different things, this makes it easy for people to, you know, kind of bake their own. So John Papa has been involved in this. He's done several of these, and he's got a great post on there about, you know, setting up Angular and Durandal and using Sidewaffle. So, and it's interesting, this is an open source thing. So this is a couple of guys at Microsoft working on it. But the idea is, instead of, you know, shipping something rigid inside of Visual Studio and ASP.NET, instead, if you're interested in something like Angular or Ember, you know, then you're probably pretty familiar and comfortable with open source, and you know, you're going to be okay with installing Sidewaffle, which is an open source, you know, Visual Studio add-in, and it's going to help you, you know, it makes it easier to pull in some of these, to right click and say, I'd like a new AngularJS controller.
So what's the advantage of Sidewaffle over a Visual Studio extension?
So, and I'm not an expert here, but my understanding is that Sidewaffle is a Visual Studio extension. But the problem was in the past that that in order to add, you had to create a new V6 thing to install a new template for any of these types. So you would say, you know, create a new template for Ember.js or create a new template for Angular. But then once you're started, you're kind of on your own. Like this just kind of dumps you into a working project and then you kind of go from there. And a lot of, you know, what we heard from a lot of people is that that's kind of helpful. It's a sample. It sets everything up. But I'm just going to go through and delete all your stuff and start over. And what I really want to do is file new project and then be able to easily right-click and add an Angular controller. Or, you know, right-click and add in, you know, say, knockout, you know, or whatever. Knockout view model, right? So that's what this does instead, is it makes it easier to add template items instead of entire project templates. Does that make sense?
It's much,
you know,
sense.
It's a little hazy, but the idea is it's easier to add things to an existing project as opposed to saying file new project. Here we give you a bunch of stuff that you, you know, aren't going to be able to use that easily.
No, that makes sense. And what Sidewaffle essentially does is it makes it easier for folks to contribute the template without having to worry about how they get the template into Visual Studio.
Right.
It's a loader.
And it also does make it easier to add things into a project then. Mm-hmm. So yes, exactly. So then I can right click on my, I can, you know, create just a standard MVC app or a new web API app or whatever. And then I can right click and say, add an Angular controller.
Okay, let me do this. Let's say I'm a consultant and I've been working in ASP.NET, either web forms or even MVC, but I've been in one of those silos. And I wake up, I hear this show, and I say, boy, that host is good. And I and then I say, I want to get smart about this. This is what I want to do. I want, and I don't necessarily want to limit myself to choosing, oh, I build apps or I build websites because I'm a consultant. I do what anybody wants, but I need to really expand my ASP.NET skills. What do I need to know? What's the right place to go? And what's new in there that I should really be aware of?
What I'd recommend, go to the ASP.NET site, ASP.NET. There's a lot of new content. There's been a lot of focus on, you know, trying to get things prepared and make it easy to get into this new kind of wave of stuff that's coming. And then also, if on the ASP.NET site, one of the things on there is this kind of this get started or this learn, and you go to the Visual Studio 2013 RC. And I would grab that 2013 RC. And I think that, you know, it's there are a lot of different choices. Again, there are a lot of different options. But the whole idea with this new release is to make it so you don't have to make all those choices up front. So you create your project and then you say, you know what? I would like to, I would like my site to be more Ajax-y. I want to start adding in some web API controllers. Well, that's great. You know, the model binding and the entity framework code first and all that stuff, or whatever your data access is, that'll still work great with web API. And it's the same kind of syntax and structure for a web API controller that you get with an MVC controller. So you just right click and add a controller, you know, so it's a lot less, you can do a lot more on demand with having to, without having to learn up front. But so to answer your question, I would say check out the ASP.NET site. And you know, if you haven't been there for a while, there's a lot of new stuff. And then download the 2013 RC, which is linked off of the site. And that will show you kind of more of the experience of creating a website where you don't have to make those tough choices up front.
And Jeff, let me turn the tables on you, turn you into a representative of Telerik for a moment. Telerik has, as I understand it, controls for ASP.NET, and they also have Kendo, which is more of a whole framework, but also consists of controls. And how does that fit into this picture?
So our controls that we provide for web forms, right? We call them our Ajax controls. There's more than 80 controls that you're going to be able to grab and download, and they'll work in this Visual Studio 2013 environment with, you know, in a standard ASPX web form. You can use those with no problem. The Kendo UI framework, there's actually two different flavors you can work with here, right? You can work with just plain Kendo UI, which is JavaScript, jQuery extensions, and widgets that'll give you that great look and feel in your HTML. And you can also get Kendo UI MVC extensions, which will give you that great HTML helper hookup so that you can build those great widgets without having to meddle with a lot of JavaScript. You can use your standard C# syntax, some Lambda expressions to build those controls quickly and easily from your MVC views. So we've got you covered on both sides with this new release that's coming.
So John, is that consistent with Microsoft's message, is to have third parties that are providing that kind of controls and that kind of framework?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, I'm part of these calls about the ASP.NET site, and that's always part of kind of the planning, and it's definitely that it's very healthy to have, you know, there's only so much the ASP.NET team can or should do and really focus on and be successful. And there's only so much that, you know, should be in the box. And then that's, you know, a great sign of a healthy, you know, ecosystem and everything is then you can, people that are doing more, that are pushing further, or that, you know, want to simplify something, that instead of writing a bunch of code that they then need to test out and everything, you grab a control, that's what I'd be doing, you know? Yeah.
Right. So note to self is to have someone from Telerik and someone from some of the competitors on talking about what is available for supplementing what Microsoft provides. But that brings us full circle back to what Microsoft provides. John, what else is new in the 2013 release in 4.5? What else should I know about? Should I be learning about? I know, for example, there's SignalR as a major component.
Yeah. Well, I'm first of all, let me just say, I'm really glad. I thought that I'd run my mouth too much and I wasn't going to get time to talk about some of this stuff. And so I'm glad that there's still a little time for that. So, there's some great new stuff. SignalR makes it easy to do real-time communication. So the idea is, it's always been possible for a browser to ping the server and say, like, hey, you know, can you get me some more data? But it's not easy for the server to push information back down to the browser. So there's all kinds of different examples where, you know, that could be useful. You know, there's obviously simple things like a chat, but there are tons of other things where, you know, you want to be able to push information down. Maybe you're shopping on a site and you want to update people and say, hey, this item is now, there's only 3 left in stock, you know, or just tons of stuff, games. There's a huge amount of things that you can do when real time becomes easy and available. And so what SignalR does is there's a client and a server piece to it, and it abstracts away the difficulties of doing that. So instead of saying, well, this site only will work with these browsers and you must install it on this server, you know, this SignalR says, all right, let's work out the best communication mechanism we can between client and server. So if it's running on an older browser and it's running, say it's running on IE6 and connects to my server, we're going to say, well, we want a real-time connection. You don't do WebSockets, you don't do this. We may fall back to forever frames or whatever IE6 is going to support. So that's kind of, or long polling, you know, I mean, so that's kind of what SignalR provides. So it makes it easy to do cross-browser real-time communication. And then once you have that real-time link, you can think of it as you do remote procedure calls. So your JavaScript can essentially call a method on the server, or your server, your SignalR hub can invoke a JavaScript call on the client. So that's SignalR. Some other things I'm excited about, I'll mention two other big things I'm excited about with this release. One is the Visual Studio tooling. It's just incredible what they've been doing. So they added in with Visual Studio 2012, one of the updates, I believe it was 2012.2 release, they added in something called Page Inspector. And what that does is it embeds IE into individual studio. So then on the fly, you can, you know, as you're editing your code, you can see what it looks like. And you can actually go in and, you know, mouse over something in the live view and see the code, you know, it updates to where your code is. And also, it's actually running it. So if you have data pulled out of a database, you're actually seeing that in the screen in Visual Studio. What they did with the 2013 release is completely pop that out of Visual Studio. So now there's a real-time link between Visual Studio and any browser, as many browsers as you want to connect. So you've got your, you know, you've got, you're working in Visual Studio, you're running your application, and then you can see it inside of, you know, say Chrome, a mobile emulator, i.e. Firefox, and you can type, you can make an update in Visual Studio and hit a button, or there's Control Alt Enter, it's a keyboard shortcut, and it refreshes all those browsers at the same time. So that's slick, but then
that is very slick.
How do you, if I'm in Visual Studio, Do you have this at the top at your fingertips as to how you actually get started doing that?
Yeah, so it's in Visual Studio 2013, and it's up at the top. So there's a browser link thing.
Yes.
And so basically,
with your browsers.
Yep. And so when you run the application, then it's going to show those connected browsers. So
is it this button that looks kind of like the old debug reset button while I'd be debugging through my website?
Yeah, exactly. So you can say which browsers you want to debug with. So you can say debug with IE, or you can say debug with whatever. And then you can say I would like to set multiple connected browsers. Does that make sense?
Very cool.
Yep. And then it gets even cooler, because at Build this past summer, Mads open sourced browser link. So this is a Visual Studio feature that's using SignalR to connect Visual Studio and your browsers, and then it's been open sourced, and it's also completely extensible. So he just did something at TechEd in Australia a couple of weeks ago, where he showed some things like, you run your application, you know, you made it in Visual Studio, it's an ASP.NET app, you run the app, then he shows it in Chrome, and he's got a Chrome extension that he wrote. And he clicks on that, and all of a sudden his page now becomes content editable. So he double clicks on some content and just starts typing some new content. And when he does that, that updates in Visual Studio. You see what I'm saying? So it really starts turning things on its head. It's a lot more than just live reload. It's this, you know, what you can do when you've got both linked together. And I talked to him, I stopped by his office in August, and he showed me some things, and I said, you know what I've always wanted is the ability to go through a site, load it up in the browser, and just click around, and it would keep track of which CSS classes I'm using and which ones are probably no longer needed. He's like, oh, great. He demoed that like a month later, not even 3 weeks later, he demoed that at TechEd Australia. And it was exactly that. So it was, you go through, you click through the site, and he had done a browser link extension that then went through and started marking all of his CSS classes that were unused.
Are these extensions available for the RC now?
It's changed over time. I believe actually it is. It's out on GitHub, the browser link. It's under Mads Christensen is his name. If you just search for GitHub browser link, it'll come up. But there are several, but it's, I don't know if it's in sync with what's in the released version of Visual Studio, meaning that Browser Link and Visual Studio need to be in sync with the same version, I think. So I don't know. Maybe it'll work for you. But it'll definitely work very soon when it's released. So that's one thing I'm super excited about. I just said super excited. I've just been assimilated completely. Okay. One other thing that I think is cool is Owen and Katana. Can I talk about that? Katana.
Please do.
That sounds dangerous.
It sounds like a John Irving novel, actually.
It does. So the idea is, and it's conceptual, but it's going to really pay off in the long run, so stick with me. Owen is the Open Web Interfaces for .NET. So it's a specification. It's not any code. It's not something you can run. There's no Owen to install. So you can think of Owen as a specification like, say, HTML. And then Katana is the Microsoft implementation of that specification. So again, if you're thinking of, you know, ONB being like HTML, then Katana would be like Firefox. You know, it's an open source browser that implements, you know, specification, right? So Katana is the Microsoft implementation. It ships, Microsoft ships it, and it's actually part of a lot of what we're shipping the new ASP.NET stuff on top of. What it gives you is a couple of things. It changes the hosting model so that, you know, you have any Katana or any OWN host can host an OWN application. So what that means is if you have something that's built to run on top of OWN, it could run in an IIS and it could be hosted in IIS and ASP.NET just like what we're going to be shipping. So that's Katana, is that hosting. But you could also say, no, I want to host it in a service. Or I want to host it on an, I don't know, in an iOS app or whatever. You know, it's a completely, the hosting is portable.
So I can host an ASP.NET application inside of another application.
Kind of. It's kind of more like, instead of saying like, well, you know, really ASP.NET is built to run on top of ASP.NET. It's not what you're hosting inside of, it's what you're hosting on top of. So it really makes it kind of portable.
I don't need to host on top of IIS. I don't have to put my MVC application on IIS, then I can put it somewhere else.
Right. And, you know, for the most part, I would say you kind of need to, you know, that's normally a kind of crazy thing to want to do. Like if you want a web application, you probably want to run that on a web server that's, you know, going to handle all kinds of things like service restarting and, you know, managing resources and that kind of thing. But you can then say, well, I've got a smaller thing, or I've got something where I just want to host these services. I want to host some SignalR services, or I want to host web API services, and I'd like to run that inside a Windows service or something. So it starts to, you know, give you a lot of flexibility. But the real payoff with this, I think, is that not only is OWN kind of changing what you're plugged into, but it also makes a stack. So your application is a stack that's running on top of this OWN host. And you can plug in other things into that stack. So this is the idea of OWN middleware. So let's say we want to plug in some OWN middleware that does some, you know, site monitoring and diagnostics, or I have my own custom authentication thing, or, you know, whatever it is. I worked on a sample. I played with something with David Fowler that reversed every string in, you know, that I output. So, I mean, just to play around, but the idea is basically, so a request comes in, it goes through my middleware, it goes down lower into the stack, and then on the way back out, it says, oh, here's my string that's been returned to me, let's reverse that string. And then it returns that. So the idea is that you can plug things in. And from the ASP.NET site, or ASP.NET side of things, you might think of this kind of like a module, except it's a lot more flexible. And then for people that are outside of the ASP.NET world, this is similar to things like, you know, there's Rack or, oh gosh, PHP's had this, Python's have this. So it's been something that other ecosystems have really taken advantage of. So, you know, it's just this kind of idea that it's a very kind of lightweight way to kind of build up a stack of things, and then you can plug things in between. I know right now it sounds totally conceptual. Half the people I talk to about this say, I don't get it. And that's fine, but it's something to be aware of, because a lot of the ASP.NET current release is now running on top of it, and it's going to enable a lot of really cool things in the future.
So can I take a swag at saying that another way?
Yes, please.
So if we've been doing a lot of work with dependency injection and composing our applications from other libraries that we've been able to load up and configure through webconfig, We're extending that capability now so that we're going to be able to compose not just our application, but the framework that our application sits on top of.
Absolutely. Yep. So your application sits on top of the stack, and then you can plug other things into the stack along the way, and they may optimize it. They may change how things run, and that allows you to do quite a bit at runtime. You know, that or plug things together in a different way. So absolutely, instead of saying, you know, I want to modify my ASP.NET application, so I need to learn a lot about the world I live in and consume APIs and do all this stuff and you know, work from it within the confines of my ASP.NET app. Instead, you can just build your app and then sit it on top of something else that that can change the behavior.
All right, so I have to say this. I tend to be privately impatient with developers who complain about the pace of change and how they have to learn new things, because that's, in my, you know, secret opinion, that's, which I'm now sharing with everybody, that's the nature of our business, and that's the nature of things making progress, and thank goodness
that
things
paid the big bucks.
Exactly. Right? And thank goodness things didn't stop short with DCOM. But that said, it is a bit overwhelming. I mean, there is so many new technologies just in the .NET space. Add to that that ASP.NET is interacting with HTML5, JavaScript, and then add in this ability to add in Angular and et cetera, you know, all the various libraries. Then add in that you're changing the game a bit on how the whole ASP.NET stack is put together. It feels like a full-time job just to figure out what there is, let alone to build anything with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that is definitely part of the job. And as you've said, you know, it's something that's always been there. Like, I spent tons of time learning about DCOM or learning about, you know, how things change from VB5 to VB6 or whatever it is. And you just kind of roll with it, you know. But I do think, too, that there are a few strategies I've been using lately. And I'm thinking of this. I spoke at a Danish developer conference earlier this year. I keynoted the conference, which was a big excitement for me. I'm going to be giving a similar talk at NDC London this December. I just found out I was accepted for that. But the talk is on...
John's becoming a big guy. Have you noticed
this? Look at this. John Galloway, okay. International speaker. Hey.
John, open paren, Scott Hanselman, close paren, Galloway.
Well, I'm excited about this talk. It's one of these, you know, I do a lot of talks like, here's what's new in ASP.NET. But this talk is, how do you keep up? That's really kind of trying to answer the question, you know, that we all ask ourselves, mm-hmm. that you just ask. And so, you know, some of the main things that I focused on with that is kind of the idea of having a portfolio view of your, of, you know, what you're trying to learn about. So by that, I mean, there are some things out there that I'm just hearing about now and I'm keeping an eye on, you know, and I kind of put that in my long-term growth, you know, list. And I kind of, you know, it's like, okay, there's this, and I kind of track it over time. Okay. I'm hearing more and more people talking about Angular, you know, let me dig into this. Let me maybe look at a course, or let me spend a few minutes reading about it, or you know, just kind of pick up some more over time.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but just on that note, I have to point out that Dan Wallin has an extraordinary video out for free on YouTube called Angular in 60-ish Minutes. And I need to plug that if you're going to talk about learning Angular, because it's quite amazing that he did that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a key thing, is that, like, if you're following something over time, then when it gets to be time to learn more, then take advantage of somebody that's, you know, put that effort in. You know, Pluralsight's got a ton of great information. I also have been keeping up, you know, Rob Connery's been tracking a lot of these things, and it's great to see different perspectives on that. So, you know, kind of like watching as something kind of comes into view. And so if something's kind of looming out there and then kind of fades out, then, you know, you don't have to stress about it. And then when you do need to learn about it more, you kind of learn about it. But so there's kind of different buckets I put things in. There's some things that I need to know about right now. And, you know, I've got to dig in, you know, I've got to really get into it in real detail. And there's other things where I just kind of am like, all right, I'm tracking this. And I just kind of want to know generally where it fits in. You know, if this is a client side library, or this is a, you know, a new way to, you know, think about storing data or whatever it is. I don't know if that's helpful. That's part of why it's an hour long talk.
No, it's actually brilliant. It's a great perspective.
And to be clear, what I'm hearing, though, is we don't have to choose to use all of these things. If we're a web forms developer right now, you can continue being a web forms developer. You don't have to bring in MVC. that's an option for us that we can add.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, over time, a lot of these models become more similar. And I think also over time, as I've grown as a developer, learning a new framework has gotten easier because I know the drill now a little bit. You know, there's what people do I learn from? How do I read the documentation? You know, I've learned that, you know, digging into a working sample as early as possible and just running the code and seeing how it works and playing with it and breaking it is a good thing. But yeah, I mean, you don't have to do any of these things, but I do. There's a huge correlation, I think, between both job satisfaction and career growth opportunities to being able to, you know, at least be familiar with a lot of these new things.
Yes. And the corollary is if there's a technology you don't like, wait an hour.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and you know, that's absolutely a great thing. There are so many different things, and I know developers I've worked with over time, and they've gone way down into, you know, whatever it is, a specific mobile stack, or they've gotten really, you know, into specific flavors of JavaScript, or, you know, different data technologies. There's, I mean, we're kids in candy stores, you know? I mean, I think that's a better way to look at it, is not get overwhelmed, but find what is cool and exciting. Hopefully, I mean, there's so many options. Hopefully you can find something, you know?